Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Brian Dean, the SEO and content marketing guru behind the massively popular blog Backlinko, where he teaches more than 3 million yearly readers how to create and optimize content in order to rank well in search engines. Hailed as a top blogger to follow by Forbes and called an SEO genius by Entrepreneur Magazine, Brian has been in the world of content and SEO for a decade now. And what originally began with his own misadventures into blogging for a few years after leaving graduate school gradually became Brian's personal crash course in learning what it takes to consistently engineer viral content. That led him to starting an SEO agency where he's since gone on to help marketers at companies like Apple, Disney, IBM, and Amazon to create content that stands out from the crowd. Today, Brian's blog reaches nearly 100,000 email subscribers. He regularly releases in-depth video content to more than 170,000 YouTube subscribers and has over 3,000 students who have gone through his paid courses on both SEO and generating views on YouTube. In this episode, Brian and I talk about how he went from first stumbling around with building his own websites, trying to drive traffic, to finally cracking the code and building a repeatable process for systematically ranking content at the top of search engines. We cover how he's built a multifaceted seven-figure business over the years around SEO consulting, paid speaking gigs, affiliate revenue, coaching, and his flagship online courses. We dig into exactly what's working best in the world of content and SEO for 2019, Brian's advice for what it takes to truly stand out and drive traffic to your website, how to quickly rank well for competitive search terms, and more. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Brian Dean. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ryan.
Hey, I'm pumped to be speaking with you today. And, you know, as we were talking before we hit record, you're someone who I've learned from afar for several years. So this is awesome. And I have a million questions. But before we dive into the really SEO and content specific stuff, I do want to rewind the clock a little bit. Where are you originally from?
From Providence. Well, I'm from a place called Pawtucket, Rhode Island, which is a stone's throw from Providence, Rhode Island. Which is, no one even knows that, but at least it's a somewhat of a starting point.
A nice big city in the USA, huh?
Yep.
You know, growing up, what did your parents do as you were a kid? Did this have some sort of impact on where you're at today?
Zero. So in my family, there's no entrepreneurs in my family. Like when I grew up, it was all get good grades, go to college, get a job. And I followed that path for a long time. Now, my parents instilled a lot of good values in me, like a good work ethic and honesty and stuff like that. But as it pertains to venturing out and do your own thing or being an entrepreneur, it really didn't have an impact because I was grew up in that model. Like I didn't even have like an uncle who owned a business, like nothing. So for me, everything was grades, college, job. And I followed that for a long time, actually, until I basically dropped out of grad school when I was getting my PhD. And I got that far in that path, and then I had enough and left.
Wow. What made you what made the decision to leave? Why?
Well, the biggest one is I started to hate it. Like, I think there's like a threshold of...
That's a good reason.
And it was a blessing in disguise because sometimes your situation that's not great, but it's not bad enough for you to make a move. And basically I was living in Boston. I got my master's in Boston, and then I went to Indiana to get a PhD, and I hated it. I hated Indiana. I hated everything. I hated my advisor. It was a lot of like horrible, I hated every day. So I knew I had to get out. Fortunately I did. And I left trying, and the idea was that I would get a job, but it was during the 2008 recession. So even like pretty much no one was hiring. It was really hard to find a job. So I ended up in my parents' basement, which wasn't a huge upgrade from where I was in Indiana. And that's when I started to kind of tinker around with this whole online thing. So that's what got me into it. It was more of a like a happy accident than any sort of inspiration or plan along the way.
I find that that's how a lot of the coolest things, like maybe inflection points, you could say, how they come about.
For sure. So the inflection point was leaving. I mean, if I was stayed there, there was no way I would have ever in a million years started a business. Like, it never crossed my mind once my entire life. And when I was in my parents' basement, I picked up The 4-Hour Workweek by Timothy Ferriss. And that was the first thing that was an inflection point, because it planted the seed and got me to think, wow, I can do this. Like, this is for anybody. I'm anybody. Like, I'm a guy in his basement, his parents' basement. So it empowered me to think for the first time that I could start a business. I didn't have to necessarily get a job. And then all the travel and stuff like that was this like icing on the cake that really appealed to me at the time too.
What was your very first website? Do you remember?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. So my first website, I was a dietitian when I had left the PhD program. So I decided to do something in nutrition. So I created a program that was basically an ebook that helps people get rid of their back pain using some exercises, but also a lot of nutrition stuff. So a lot of anti-inflammation things, weight loss to put less pressure in your lower back, stuff like that. It didn't do well. It was, I didn't know what I was doing, but that was my first thing that I did.
Yeah. First learning experience, right? A way to get your hands dirty.
Yeah. A lot of learning experiences for that one.
What was your first website then that started to actually do well?
So I had a couple like affiliate sites and sites that were monetized with AdSense, and those did well, but they did well in the sense like they would do well for a while, then a Google update would hit, and then they'd go to zero. And then I'd build them back up again using some slightly different strategies, and then it would go to zero. So that happened for a good 3 or 4 years. On the side, I was freelance writing, and that's how I made I would make some money during the peaks, and I would stop freelance writing and then hit a valley and start freelance writing again. And that did its thing for about 3 or 4 years when I actually got a site that started to do well. And around the same time, I started an agency that did SEO for clients. And the site that did well was using White Hat SEO, and I started doing White Hat SEO for clients, and they started to get results and kind of spreading me around, help spread the word and send it for people to me from their network. And that's when I started to first have success, was about the summer of 2012.
Awesome. So you're learning, you're putting your own sort of successful tactics into practice for yourself. You're starting to teach other people how to do it as client consulting work. Do you remember the first paid client that you ever landed?
Oh, for sure. So these are easy. These are like first kiss. How do you forget that stuff? So the first one was a guy that sold gold and silver bullion. I don't want to like say his name or his business, but yeah, they sold like coins and bullion bars, mostly to preppers, people that were really paranoid that the whole world is going to end and they're going to have, they're probably right. I'm laughing like, ha ha. Meanwhile, it lasted
about
5
later.
Yeah, exactly. It lasted about 5 hours if anything happened. But that was the market that he was in. It was very interesting because it was a strange market I'd never marketed to before. And we did really well creating stuff for this prepper, anti-paper currency community that loved to spread the word about the stuff we were putting out and link to us.
Wow. That's fascinating. So I do want to transition the conversation to talk more about you now. So fast forwarding a little bit, your blog Backlinko, you guys reach, 3 million readers a year by the last count I saw, nearly 100,000 subscribers.
How'd you see that?
All of my poking around.
Yeah, so good research, man.
Yeah, there we go. 100,000 email subscribers-ish from the last I saw. Mm-hmm. Your blog's been hailed as a top blog to follow by Forbes. You've been called an SEO genius by Entrepreneur Magazine. Your YouTube channel has millions of views, over 170,000 subscribers. Why did you originally decide to start Backlinko? Was it kind of like a natural progression from the consulting work you were doing?
Kind of, yeah. It was during this time that I was doing the consulting. I had my first website in 2012. And I was like, this White Hat SEO thing is cool. Because at the time I was doing blog comment spam and article directories, OG stuff, easy in articles, garbage like that. And for the first time, I was doing White Hat SEO for my own properties and also for my clients. Like for the gold client, we created an infographic that went viral in that kind of sub-investing space of preppers getting gold and stuff. And it did crazy. Like it was getting featured on all these sites, getting links back to us. People were emailing us to share it. It was like, this White Hat SEO thing is legit. The thing was, I didn't really know a lot about it. I was just starting myself. Like I was kind of learning as I went. And when I researched what SEO strategies, kind of tactical stuff that you could do in that space, there wasn't a whole lot. And I realized there was an opportunity there. If I'm looking for this stuff and I'm coming up empty, there has to be tons of other people like me who are in the same boat. So that's when I realized that it was an opportunity to launch a blog that had actionable strategies about white hat SEO.
Now, you know, today looking at your blog content, pretty much everything that I've ever been able to see and read of yours is at least in like the 5,000 to 10,000 word range. So you're very well known for your depth of content. There's no fear to go super deep on a topic that you're personally interested in, I can tell. Did it start that way? Did you immediately sort of jump into the super long form stuff, or has that been a gradual evolution?
Pretty much. What was long form changed as I went along, both for myself and in general. But when I first started, it was definitely 1,500 words plus, which at the time, like 2013, was pretty long form. I mean, no one was doing that. Everyone, because there was this idea, almost a fear, that if you went above 400 words, no one would read it because his attention span was so, people's attention spans were so short. But I realized from reading longer stuff that if it's good and it's something I'm interested in and want to learn about, I prefer long because I get everything I need on one page as opposed to having to jump around to different resources. So I did 1,500, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. I think the most is probably like 7,000 words. But I think once you hit a certain point, it's not about word count. It's more about covering the topic thoroughly. And some topics, you can do it in 1,500. Like I have a guide to mobile SEO that's only about 2,500 words or 2,000 words because there's just that much to say versus a topic like SEO in 2019, which is something I put out recently. There's a whole lot to cover. That's bigger. I could have covered a lot more. That's more like 4,500 to 5,000 words.
So speaking of SEO in 2019, how important is long form content going into 2019?
I think it's similar as it was last year. I feel like it's not changing that much. The thing that's changing is that Google is getting better at identifying user intent and figuring out what people want. So I have a lot of long form posts on the Backlinko blog that over the last year, they weren't doing well. I changed them. And they're doing better. And a lot of times there's fewer words on the page than there was before, but it better matches user intent. A good example is there's a post in the blog about that's optimized around SEO campaign. That's the keyword. The old post was a long form case study of how someone executed an SEO campaign. It was in depth, like every step, every email they sent, every keyword, like it was super in depth, long form content. But it didn't do well because people searching for SEO campaign didn't want a case study. They wanted a step-by-step plan that they could follow that wasn't one person's experience with it that they don't necessarily know how to apply to their own stuff, which makes sense. So I changed it from that to a step-by-step campaign, how to set it up, similar length. And now it was not even on the first page, and now it's number one in Google for that keyword. And with no extra promotion, no link building, like it just secretly updated it and then it started to move up and now it's number one. So I feel like that's a lot more important than hitting a word count or going long form.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. The user intent, always number one. So how do you decide today on a topic to write about on your blog? Is it solely keyword driven? Is it a mixture of interests and opportunity? Can you talk a little bit about that?
It's a mix. So everything starts with keywords because when I publish something or I create a piece of content, the goal is that it gets traffic and eyeballs and readers for years. I'm not a big fan of publishing stuff that is a flash in the pan. Publish it, it gets a spike, and then it goes to zero. I like to publish stuff that can do well for years, and then with an update can do well basically indefinitely as long as that topic exists. So part of it is the keyword because that's, you know, people are searching for that thing. I want to create stuff around a proven demand rather than make something up. So, you know, I don't know how many people are searching for SEO campaign. Not many. It's only like 500 people a month, but there are some people searching for it. So I know there's demand around that topic and I want to fulfill that demand. It's a lot easier to do that than to create demand. The other factor is how much I'm doing it or have done it. So I only like to publish content on subjects that I know about. Right, rather than fake it till you make it. So, you know, I'm not a coder. I don't know a whole lot about coding. So I don't publish a lot of super technical stuff like JavaScript rendering for Googlebot and things like that. Mm-hmm. I kind of stay in my lane. You know what I mean? And so that's another factor. If there's a keyword that's great, but I don't know anything about it, I'll skip over to the next one that I do know something about. And more importantly, I've done it or doing it or have done it. Like I have some personal experience to draw on because that's one of the ways that my content stands out because other people are just regurgitating stuff. And I'm able to say, look, this thing happened. This is here, X, Y, and Z. And that is a big competitive advantage that the blog has.
I like it. So I've seen more and more video content also coming out of you over the past couple of years. It's kind of like been a steady increase from my outward observation, at least. So how does video play into your content development process? Is it like video first or does video support a written piece?
It's definitely video support. So we're not even video first yet. But I mean, if you look at the best sources of traffic, because ultimately at the end of the day, this content stuff comes down to traffic. Google is number one by a mile and a half. And YouTube is a very, very distant second. It's better than Facebook, in my opinion, better than most social media sites, but it's still a distant second because so much has to happen for that person to end up on your website, then sign up as a lead, then a customer. There's a lot of steps versus Google, which is like they search for a keyword that they're interested in, something you're selling or you're doing or a service you provide, content related to it. They click on it. They read it, there's a pop-up, sign up for the newsletter, they sign up. Like that's a pretty frictionless process. On YouTube, content's kind of coming at you. You see a video that that's interesting, that's where most of the views come from on YouTube, not from search, just from suggestions. So people see a suggested video, they click on it, they watch it, then they have to kind of fish around to find your website. YouTube doesn't make it easy. So then they got to land on your website, and usually they land on a homepage or something that's not related to what they're just watching and have to sign up, blah, blah, blah. Not to say YouTube is useless. I think it's great. It's super powerful and untapped because just the eyeballs that get on your video, on your brand is priceless at a certain level. But in terms of like what to make a priority out of, for most people, I'd still recommend focusing on Google SEO and then using YouTube as a complement to that.
I like it. Great advice. So, you know, speaking more to your Backlinko audience now, I said roughly around 3 million yearly readers. Does that still sound accurate?
Yeah.
Cool. So you mentioned that most people find your blog from Google search. Is that today still the case?
It's probably like half, and then the other half is a mix.
Sort of a combination of like direct traffic, social, all those.
You know how it is in Google Analytics. There's like maybe a third you have no idea what it is. Like direct is who knows what that is. So there's that. Some social, some referral traffic from links, people linking and sharing, you know, things like that. And then YouTube.
What's your number one piece of advice for people on the traffic driving front? Those listening today that want to drive more traffic to their blogs, their websites, what should they focus on most as we head into 2019?
The number one thing is that focus on creating something that's worth sharing and linking to, that people would want to share and link to. So a lot of websites that I look at that people say, I'm not getting any traffic. And then when I look at their business, not even just their content, just their site in general, it's just another site. You know, you can confuse it with 1,000 others. So you have to be remarkable in some way. Content is an easy way to do that because it's a lot easier to create a remarkable piece of content than a remarkable business. You know what I mean? It's a lot easier to create an awesome blog with a totally different content that's different out there than something like Uber or Airbnb that's a category creator. Mm-hmm. So people link to Uber, they go to Airbnb, they don't do content marketing. You know, who reads the Uber blog or the Airbnb? No one. Or the Lime blog. No one reads that. They don't have one. It doesn't matter. They have a unique business and people find them and use them. So if you have that, then you're in good shape. Like that's awesome. But if not, you have to create something to complement your core offering that's super compelling that people are going to say, wow, this is awesome, and share it around, whether it's shares, links and social shares or both. That's the number one key. And that bar is a lot higher than most people think. So most people create good content consistently, which is a huge waste of time. It's much better to create something that's amazing, get it over that bar. And once you're over that threshold, it all starts coming through and traffic starts coming to you.
I love it. You're speaking my language. This is awesome. So Brian, do you remember the first time that you earned money from your blog that was not a direct consulting gig? So maybe something where you're speaking, or maybe an affiliate payout, maybe the sale of your own product. What was that first time?
Oh, definitely. I remember first times. How do you, first of all, I don't know where these are going, by the way. These first times can get kind of intimate. So I love it. But of course, you always remember the first dollar you made like that. The first dollar, well, I mean, back in the ebook days, I did make a couple sales, actually quite a few sales, but definitely not enough to like call it a business or have anything sustaining. Definitely remember that. But after that, it was mostly affiliate revenue, things like that. And then when I first launched Backlinko pretty early on, within like 6 months, I launched a little product that wasn't like a flagship course that was called the Advanced Link Building Course. And it was basically like just a bunch of strategies that I liked that I was using and made little videos. Very simple, but it sold a few because I had a small email list. And that was the first like, wow, okay, this could really be something. Because I was only a couple months into the blog. And then in October of the first year, so about 9 or 10 months after I launched, I did a full like flagship launch and all that stuff. And that was like, that was legit. That was more like a real launch.
What is, say, like, you know, taking a 10,000 foot view now, what would you say is like roughly an annual figure for how much your blog and speaking and courses and everything sort of put together generates for your business?
So looking broad, it's in the 7-figure range. Backlinko is a private company, so I don't want to get into like all the nuts and bolts of revenue, sure. But it's 7+ from that.
Awesome. And what is like the rough distribution look like? So, is, you know, percentage wise, maybe we could look at how much is affiliate versus courses, speaking, these types of things.
It's pretty much all courses at this point. Like I don't do any affiliate stuff anymore. I will kind of either sold off or just stopped working on all the affiliate sites. I don't have any affiliate links on the blog. I don't promote anything as an affiliate. So then everyone knows my recommendations aren't biased in any way. And I don't really do consulting or speaking anymore. So it kind of leaves courses. It's all 2 courses. We have an SEO, it's not a pitch, just explaining the business. I have an SEO course and another one, YouTube SEO. And that's, if not 100% the revenue, very close.
I like it. We'll link to those courses in the show notes too, for those of you that want to learn more about these 2 super important topics. But Brian, I want to be respectful of your time. I got a couple of my quick questions for you. I designed them to be short on my end. Your responses don't have to be equally short. What would be your number one piece of advice today to those listening that want to start their own blog? What should they focus on to get towards building a profitable business around a blog?
So the first thing I'd focus on is positioning. So this is definitely like a 10,000 foot view thing. I usually don't like that. I usually like more like on the ground tactical stuff, but I think it's important in this to answer this question, right? Because if you jump into the tactics without nailing this part, it's going to be a huge struggle going forward. So the first thing you want to do is look at your blog like a product or a brand and say, what's going to make my blog different than what's out there? So if you're launching a fitness blog, why would someone read your fitness blog compared to other people? Maybe you teach moms. Maybe you teach SaaS founders. Maybe you teach people that are jacked how to get more jacked. Or maybe you teach people that used to be jacked and they're fat how to get jacked again. Whatever. The point is you want to have a positioning that's really unique and helps you stand out. Then you can create content that's amazing and backs it up and all that stuff. But if you're just like, hey, it's Brian's fitness blog. We write about fitness. Here are some cool posts. It's going to be a real struggle to get going.
I like it. All right, Brian, my last question for you. What's been the best investment you feel you've ever made in the context of growing your business? So this could be in the form of time, money, tools, product, services, or otherwise.
That's a tough one. I would, if I had to choose one, I would say I have invested a lot in design. So I've worked with a lot of, I've realized early on, like I'm horrible at design. So I started very early on, I started hiring people to help me design stuff. And I realized it helped the blog stand out, it helped content stand out, it helped more people share. It was a huge differentiator, it still is, because most people aren't willing to spend a lot on design because it is expensive if you hire great people. But I would say, like, looking back of all the money I put in, that's the one that I probably got the most out of.
I love it. All right, Brian, well, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you and everything you're up to?
So the best place to go is backlinko.com. And when you land there, you can sign up to the newsletter and get exclusive tips that I only share with subscribers.
Awesome. All right, Brian, thank you again for joining us.
Cheers, Ryan. Thanks.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.